You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Come into the circle of love and justice. Come into the community of compassion, spirituality and well-being. Come and you shall know peace and joy. Welcome. My name's Jenny Dyster, the recently appointed lay leader of this congregation. This fellowship has existed in South Australia since 1854. Unitarians began worshipping on Kaurna and Peramangk lands in the early days of our state's existence, and Norwood, of course, is on Kaurna land. We acknowledge this and honour the elders past and present, their connection with country and continued concern. Yesterday we had a Freesia Blitz at Shady Grove. Lovely day for it. Today would be a nightmare. And as I passed the cemetery, I recalled Ivan Copley's smoking ceremony at Beau's funeral. The bush care team are looking to employ a young person with some Peramangk connections to assist Melissa and the Cornerstone kids with weeding and monitoring what's growing and thriving there. The orchids are magnificent, by the way, so if you're going up for John's service this afternoon at 5 o'clock, daylight saving time, you don't have to go far, just look down from the veranda, the steps there. It's just amazing the variety and number of orchids you'll see. Our Unitarian Church is a spiritual community, one that supports you in seeking and following your own spiritual path. Our principles are dear to us. They're on the white banner there at the front of the organ. The principles are consistent with an atheist, humanist, or religious perspective. We don't prescribe your theology or direct you on a spiritual journey. Your path is yours to find, and the role of the church is to support you on that, on any path that helps you see more clearly, love more abundantly, and work toward a better world. Please do join us after the service for coffee, tea, and cake. Remember to wear your mask until you're sitting down with a cuppa and optional food. Now, it's our tradition to share the significant events of our spiritual lives in an open forum of fellowship. I invite you now to deepen and bind that relationship by sharing any recent event that's been significant in your spiritual life. Light a candle from a chalice and tell us as briefly as possible about it. You may prefer to light a candle in silence. Listening with an open heart and mind is the most important part of this practice, and I'll to save you going up the steps, I will light the first candle. Today's reading is a poem by James Whitcomb Riley, and it's about the best. It relates to my theme today of great expectations. Do you expect the best? And I don't mean the best in terms of what money can buy. The advertising industry wants you to buy the best you can buy, and the self-help industry wants you to be the best that you can be. But Riley's view runs deeper and it's nuanced. We'll follow the reading with a short period of meditation before the interlude. I quarrel not with destiny, but make the best of everything. The best is good enough for me. Leave discontent alone, and she will shut her mouth and let you sing. I quarrel not with destiny. I take some things or let them be. Good gold has always got the ring. The best is good enough for me. Since fate insists on secrecy, I have no arguments to bring. I quarrel not with destiny. the fellow that goes whore for G will find he hasn't got full swing, the best is good enough for me. One only knows our needs, and he does all the distributing. I quarrel not with destiny. The best is good enough for me. Well, if you've come to this address with great expectations, you might as well resign to having them disappointed, dashed to the ground like Miss Evesham, jilted at altar. She wore the wedding gown thereafter, great for screenplays, and her anger turned cold and vengeful. She trained up her ward, Estella, to break men's hearts. Starting with the orphan Pip, whose expectations were thwarted on many levels, Estella was beyond his reach. He needed to become a gentleman. Instead, Miss Havisham supported his apprenticeship with Joe, his sister's husband, and the village blacksmith. Plot twist. When he was a little boy, visiting his parents' grave, Magwitch, an escaped convict, grabbed him and forced him to help with food and a file for the leg irons. Pip complied. Magwitch was caught, but he didn't betray Pip. He was transported to Australia, made his fortune, and became his secret benefactor. Pip was pleased. He didn't like blacksmithing or the company. Indeed, one of his workmates was horrifically violent. It was Orlick. Pip's great expectations are revived. He goes to London to be educated, and Herbert and Matthew Pocket train him to become a gentleman, which is to say a snob, who reviles former friends, bit of a gambler, bit of a lad, suitor to Estella, who's been well trained by Miss H, so she marries another bounder instead. Now Magwitch turns up and reveals himself to be the true benefactor, but this was illegal, he was a lifer. Miss Havisham's ex, and also a criminal, is out to get Magwitch. Pip feels bound to support his escape. Again, not successful. This time, Magwitch is, I think he's hung, and Pip loses his fortune. Back to square one. He goes abroad to work in the mercantile trade, and on return, he visits Miss Havisham's old place and meets Estella, wiser and sadder, having been treated badly by her husband, who's now dead. Pip realises that her suffering has been stronger than Miss Havisham's teaching and had given her a heart to understand what my heart used to be. In the ending, Dickens first wrote, that's it, redemption and realisation of folly. But due to the expectations of readers, Dickens wrote a version too, which ends with Pip and Estella leaving the garden hand in hand, Pip knowing that they will never be parted. Now, this isn't quite as true as the rest of the book, but it's very satisfying for the audience. Great expectations restored. But of course, most of the book is devoted to dissing the idea of great expectations. The novel is what the Germans would call a Bildungsroman, a novel dealing with one person's formative years or spiritual education. Pip lets go of his social aspirations to focus on reconciling with the characters who've been loyal to him all along. He pays off his debts. He earns an honest living. Now, if you look up expectations, you get many warnings. Unmet expectations often lead to a full range of negative emotions. Anger, fear, disappointment, jealousy, annoyance, bitterness, resentment, envy. Unmet expectations about the past create regret, well, we saw that with Miss Havisham, grief, sorrow, shame and sadness. And projected unmet expectations about the future are the source of depression and anxiety. If you didn't have expectations, you'd simply take things as they came and deal with them. Your judgment of things would be more objective because you wouldn't be comparing people and experiences to your expectations of them. Without expectations, acceptance of what is would be infinitely easier and you'd be happier. Well, that's the message of Christine Hassler. But would you accept advice from a blonde like this? I prefer a blonde who looks like this. At age 9, Maren Allsop formed her great expectation as a result of attending children's concerts run by Leonard Bernstein. She announced her ambition to conduct, and her dad, Lamar Allsop, said fine. After surmounting obstacle after obstacle, she became one of Lenny's students. Now, I've got a picture here of her with another one of her conducting teachers, Gustav Meyer. Also in the frame is her son. And of course, he learnt the violin. In this little video clip, you can see him busking with Maren and being filmed by his mother. Now, he's 18, but by his early teens, he had his own idea about what holidays were all about, and they were a long, long way away from the concert hall. Here he is at 18, an accomplished rock climber. My point being that parents had high expectations in terms of character and commitment, but not direction. That was for him to decide. Maren has a lot to say about teaching. She extols music teaching for all, but not necessarily to turn out musicians. She cites discipline, understanding that it really takes practice every day and applying yourself to succeed. When you play an ensemble, you have to listen to other people, but then you have to step out and take the lead. All these skills, she thought, should be available for every child. And of course, these skills are transferable and applicable to any other career. Only one other teacher in Maren's mind came close to Lenny as a mentor, and that was her high school algebra teacher, Larry Hopkins. She struggled, as many of us do, with algebra, but she refused to give up and went after school to review problems with him. Until one day it clicked. She became his star algebra student and he started showing her the new world of computing that was just taking off. And together they wrote rudimentary computer programs for answering a telephone call and other sort of banal stuff. But it was thrilling and liberating. And she says, I'll never forget him for believing in me. Now, it's in the context of education that you see more in support of high expectations. Setting higher goals, you lead others to higher achievements. Even if they don't reach the high goal, being a bit under that is better than nothing. A person doesn't actually know their own potential until they test it. You help people develop their skills and hidden abilities. A person always needs to balance their own expectations and reality. And if you want to discover the hidden abilities in your kid, you have to allow them to make mistakes, make friends, and enjoy being a child. If they have a short attention span, you don't push hard on the length of practice sessions or homework, but you might sit with them and insist on keeping them focused for short-time tasks. The other thing is, having high expectations helps dismantle inferiority complexes. If you balance right, you can considerably improve the person's self-esteem and help them get rid of any inferiority complex, leave fears or doubts aside, and concentrate not on losses but achieved results. I can remember when the NAPLAN test was in and I was teaching at Flaxmill. I had a little guy who took a lot of medication for ADHD, and I said, this NAPLAN thing might be a bit much. You want to keep me home that day? And the mother said, no way. If I did that, I wouldn't be showing faith in him. And she insisted that he turn up, and he did, with a wombat not a real one, a toy one, called Wally. Anyway, it so happened there was another child away. So we put Wally with a paper in front of him, and every time I went past, I said, Wally, you should try. You're not going to get anywhere if you don't make an effort. So Aaron and the child, the other side, would lean across, and every now and again they'd write something. So I packed up all the sheets in order at the end of the test, and the principal came around to collect them all. He didn't turn up on time. It was into recess time, so he picked up the pile, noticed this other one that wasn't in the pile, and scooped it up too. Result was, we got an official result for Wally. Aaron was very, very proud. But I'll leave the rest of the story for later. But it's time now to examine the flip side of the coin. Apart from high expectations, here's the opposite. The secret to happiness is never expect anything from anyone. Then you'll never be disappointed. Now, I don't think this is very good advice if you're heading into a relationship. Healthy, reasonable expectations in a relationship broadcast your sense of self-worth. Surely you expect to be treated in a respectful and loving manner. Expectations are normal and necessary. It's normal and necessary for other people to have expectations of us too. We expect our partners will treat us with love, kindness, affection and respect. There are times when we argue and hurt each other's feelings. Relationships aren't conflict-free, but that doesn't mean we throw expectation out the window just to avoid being hurt. And then, of course, the other thing is that expectations lead to trust. When your partner meets expectations again and again, you learn they're trustworthy. This fosters greater intimacy and deeper trust as the relationship progresses. Expectation, after all, is communication. Outlining, defining, and communicating our expectations within a relationship is the only way expectations get met, or some of the time. If we have no expectations of our partners, how do they begin to guess what it is that we want or need? Being expectationless in a relationship is definitely a lazy person magnet. If you set no expectations, you may only draw people who don't want anything expected of them. Last week, Miranda touched on the toxic side of societal expectations in her address, Lumpy in Lycra. And because music's my special interest, I'm going to dive back into it for a toxic example, a societal expectation. Harold Schoenberg was a revered writer for the New York Times. Summing up the requisites for a top conductor, he wrote in 1967, so brace yourselves for an assault on fair play and justice, "He has been tempered in the crucible, but he is still molten, and he glows with a fierce inner light. He is many things: musician, administrator, executive, minister, psychologist, technician, philosopher and dispenser. Above all, he is a leader of men, a father, a teacher who knows it all." The man who ticked all those boxes is Herbert von Karajan. The quintessential maestro, glamorous, alluring, and only a hair's breadth away from tyranny. And he demanded a fee for his service. Karajan, rather, increased the pay of conductors and those that followed in that sort of maestro route so that a conductor could be paid more than the combined incomes of the orchestra. And that is one of the things that led to the end of that sort of super maestro thing. It's pretty bad. By contrast, we have Maren Allsop, manner, forthright but kind, no stable of fast cars. She used to get up early and run 5 kilometres before breakfast. But then she found out if she used a cross trainer, she could study scores at the same time. If once she resisted tiresome gender questions, she now accepts it as her duty as a spokesperson. She set up the Taki Conducting Fellowship. Once it was obvious that the floodgates for women on the podium did not follow her impressive tally of first woman to conduct a major orchestra in America, first woman to conduct the last night of the proms, and so on. Everyone asks me, why so few women conductors and why me? I used to say, I don't know, she said, I try to use myself as a barometer and assess, but I don't get far. Now, Jenny Murray, who's the host of the BBC4 Women's Hour, identified what she considered to be a problem for women in classical music. She said the women who seem to be most welcome are the ones who are prepared to go along with the old idea that sex sells. Several issues, though, are in danger of being muddled here. Whether or not Benedetti wears a strapless dress is separate from why so few conductors appear at the proms. Allsop says, I do see that being soloists in the spotlight, there are different expectations about not just being successful, but if they're women, stunningly attractive too, Allsop says. There's a big societal pressure, but it's not as if those top soloists don't have the power of veto. We can all say no. So at some level, they must feel okay about it. And why not? If you look fabulous, like that. Plus, Allsop adds, she never had that kind of glamour, so it didn't arise. I looked okay, I hope, she says, which made it easier. On the podium, she wears tailored suits, loose enough to allow plenty of wiggle room in the shoulders, with a flash of red at the cuffs. Her gestures are compact, nimble, and persuasive, rather than imperious. An ineluctable factor that seems to be the same one that dogged women clergy. No one objects in principle. They just, by gut instinct, would prefer a man. Maron credits the Me Too movement for the will to play more women composers and employ more women as guest conductors. She hopes that familiarity will ease the discomfort of seeing women on podiums. The discomfort and underutilization of the talents of women we see in business, government, and medicine. Women have had gender parity in Australian medical schools for decades. However, they represent only 28% of medical deans and 12.5% of hospital chief executive officers. With Maron's departure for Vienna, there is no woman who leads a major American orchestra. The three that I've pictured there are young women who it's predicted that they may get a gong, but that remains to be seen. Change in expectations can be very slow, but it does happen. If you check out black and white photos of orchestras, university or police academy graduation shots from the 60s to now, you see far more women. People are no longer surprised to see a male nurse or a female doctor or a woman copper doing crowd or border control. Expectations shape our reality. Our thoughts, emotions and behaviours are all affected. And this is what makes expectations impactful. They're complex. Having them can have, as we've seen, both positive and negative outcomes. Some people view them as bad and some view them as good. Expectation is the mother of all frustration, says Antonio Banderas. High expectations are the key to everything, says Sam Walton. Two different views. They seem like opposites, but as we've seen today, either can apply. The difference, though, doesn't lie in context. It doesn't lie in education, in relationships or career. You've got to consider the positive and negative effects of expectations in all of those. The key to the seeming paradox is in control. The good news is the paradox of expectation is soluble. The outcome we get is a matter of navigating the things we can or cannot control. Having high expectations to things we can control is beneficial. It's the things outside of our control that we should be very wary of. And that's the thought that I'll leave you to chew over with every bit of psychological agility, mindful introspection and insight that you can muster. Which of my great expectations should I jettison, and which should be part of my work in progress? As we leave this hallowed place, may our feet remember its feel, so that wherever we walk, we know ourselves to be on hallowed ground. May we know that we are kin with every soul, every star, every stone and leaf of grass, and may our words be gentle and our touch be kind. Blessed be.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.